If you are anything like me, and if you're listening to this podcast, I imagine that you are, then you might sometimes feel trapped in a bit of a soulless grind where your uniqueness just blends into blandness as you find yourself trapped on the endless treadmill of content and hopeless algorithmic chasing while AI is pumping out an endless stream of sameness, drowning you in its flood. In 2025, the pressure has never felt higher or the competition more overwhelming to create brands and businesses which both pay the bills and don't sell our souls out along the way. You are in the right place and welcome back to We Are Already Free, because today you are going to learn how to consciously and authentically move into spiritual capitalism and create a category of one brand that is fiercely authentic and cuts through the noise. We are joined today by our guest, Ree Perez, who has ditched his corporate branding to create his own adventure, and his award-winning agency, Branding for the People, empowered thousands of wonderful humans to build iconic, authentic brands. He's the author of Your Brand Should Be Gay, Even If You're Not, and Ree blends spirituality with capitalism, merging business and personal growth through coaching, retreats, and masterminds. He's written the playbook for embracing your uniqueness, helping impact-driven leaders and sensitive souls like all of us to create phenomenal brands. So I'm very excited to have Ree with us today, and welcome back to We Are Already Free.
When you hear the words, we are already free, what comes up for you?
Acceptance.
Change.
A shift in awareness.
Human beings are so powerful.
There's so much more.
Everything is love behind it.
Breaking the chains of your own mind.
That which remains.
Nature.
Getting out of the matrix.
We're sitting on the treasure and it's already unlocked.
We are already free.
You're free.
You are a walking map.
I've always been free.
You are always free, already free.
We are already free.
Ree, welcome to the podcast, good sir. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here with you today.
Yeah, the pleasure and honor is all mine, Nathan. Thank you.
Oh man, we've been trying to get this one together for a while, so it just feels like a huge, like a completion of an open loop to be sitting with you here right now and to have this opportunity to share. And the first question that's coming up for me, because it's the thing that really, you know, just meeting you at first in that defecation we were doing together was like just feeling your authenticity, your depth, your presence. And then you said this term that immediately struck me. And I would just love to, as we open, understand a bit more about, in your mind, what is spiritual capitalism?
Yeah, well, great starting point, because those are probably two words that aren't typically paired together.
Right.
And the idea came for me as, I did work in the corporate world, as you had mentioned, and I've been an entrepreneur probably for the past 14 years. So in the world of capitalism, and somewhere along my journey has always been, after leaving the corporate world, something that was very purpose-driven, impact-driven, and really from a higher purpose, if you will. And the past few years, I've really decided to double down, maybe even triple down, on really integrating my spirituality with making money, with capitalism. And so the idea is bigger than just spirituality alone. You know, I can be in the woo and I can also be very much grounded in this 3D reality and what it means to manifest and create in this reality. At the same time, I can also be in the realm of what it takes to grow a business and create value in the marketplace and getting compensated for that monetarily or other ways, while also making sure that it was rooted in how it was rooted in a purpose. It was rooted in something that was coming from a higher purpose. And so that my work really becomes a vehicle for transformation. It becomes a vehicle for bringing a little bit more joy or hope or freedom or fulfillment in people's lives. And so I thought, why don't I just own that term, or why don't I just create that term and see what unfolds? And I created a mastermind with that exact concept. It's like, how do I get entrepreneurs together? They don't need to learn more. Well, maybe they do, but you don't need to learn more tactics and tools and all the AI prompts and all this sort of stuff. It's like, yeah, you can. There's plenty of places for that. But I think it's an even bigger opportunity to really drop into this bigger meaning and this bigger purpose. So I'm glad you like keyed in on that and you kind of leaned in on what I was sharing there, because it's an unfolding, if you will, since I started to proselytize that. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks to me so deeply. I actually just had a guest on, and we're going to talk about this probably a little more. Maybe we'll talk about it now. But I just had a lovely guest, yeah. a guy named Scott Carney, who is an investigative journalist who's written for years. He's dedicated his life, in fact, to writing. One of the things that he writes about is this idea of gurus and of spirituality and of what he calls the enlightenment trap. And he's actually moved over the last few years into speaking more to something he calls the griftoverse, or these kind of like wellness practitioners. Like some examples he's spoken about is Andrew Huberman, Mel Robbins, people like that, who in his perspective are actually taking advantage of people through the way they run their business. Like they're selling a brand that says, I love you, you're special, you know, like you deserve whatever the thing is, buy my pill, buy my product, buy my thing, whatever. And
yeah.
And this is something I wrestle with myself, as anyone who listens to this podcast will know, how to be authentic, how to be living in spirit in this capitalist society that feels at some deep level extractive by definition. Like it feels that in some way there's this compromise. And I'm wondering, do you believe that there, like, is it possible to truly show up authentically in service in the world as it is today without having to like sell our souls a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it almost seems like an obvious response that I would say absolutely. but I feel like I should qualify that a little bit more, because some people might be listening from the perspective of like, no, they're two very opposing ideologies, right? Let me share a story in terms of how this might offer up something here. So one of the things that really disturbs me and annoys me with a lot of the marketing tactics among very successful marketers, and I'm in branding, and we'll probably talk about it later, but branding is very distinct than marketing, but they're very interrelated. And so I'm around a lot of marketers. And one of the things that disturbs me is that there's marketing in order to, how should I say it? It's purely for the gain, or it's very manipulative, or it can be really manipulative in that way, where it's kind of like using this in order to get something from other people. And one of the things that I've seen over the years is using authenticity in order to get people to buy or follow them. And I think the real magic and the real opportunity here is that, here's what I was going to say. I lost train of my thought as I was saying this. So one of the things that annoyed me was that one of my colleagues had said, well, we're selling hope. We're selling hope. And sometimes these marketing tactics are geared to provide a little bit of hope for people. And I was a little bit triggered in that moment. And I said, well, I don't like that. I don't want to sell. I don't want to be a hope dealer. And I said, I'm open to a reframe, because I've seen marketers sell hope, but not deliver on the goods, not deliver on the transformation. And so one of my colleagues had said, well, because I said I was open to a reframe, said, well, what if hope was sacred? And I said, huh. Okay, what if hope was sacred? And then he said, well, what if we delivered the transformation? Would you still be against selling hope? And I said, okay, well, if hope was sacred and we're delivering the transformation, then okay, let's sell hope all day long. Because in the circles that I'm in, and just I've been really grateful and fortunate to be able to create opportunities for myself and be surrounded by a great circle of friends and colleagues, but that's not everyone. And if we're all walking each other home, if we're all helping each other, then I want to be able to sell hope to someone out there, maybe on the other side of the world, who just needs just a little bit ounce of hope that maybe the world could be a little bit better, or maybe their world could be a little bit better. And if that hope reaches that person and that inspires, you use in spirit earlier, that inspires that person to take a new action that puts them on the path towards a better life, then great, let's do that all day long. The problem is that most people don't deliver on the transformation, or they just sell hope for their own greed. And so there's a fine line, I think, where someone has to check themselves in their branding or in their marketing or even just in their selling. Are they doing it out of the goodness of their heart and for the highest good of themselves and for others? And or are they doing it from greed? That's the big distinction here. And so I think that's my response there, is you ladder that up to capitalism in general, which ostensibly you could say the whole purpose of capitalism is to generate, you know, for businesses, is to generate profit. It's when that profit errs on the side of greed and doesn't take into account what's best and for the highest good of the people that are intended to buy their products and services, that's the fine line. And I think introducing spiritual capitalism, you get the best of both. Let's see how that lands for you.
I appreciate that very much. You're speaking to a lot of the things I think about and wrestle with. And this idea of hope as sacred really speaks to me. I've been thinking a lot, and I actually need to memorize the author of this quote, because I think of it so often, and maybe you even know it. It might have been Martin Luther, actually, but it was basically something along the lines, even if I knew the world would end tomorrow, today I would plant my apple tree. And that to
I
me
love
is
that.
Hope.
I don't know the origin of that, but I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hope, right? It's like, okay, so all the bombs are about to go off, everything, we're screwed, it's over, but it's still worth planting an apple tree today. And the question for me when I sit with that is like, why is it still worth planting an apple tree today if the world's going to end tomorrow? And what comes to me in that is that because the act of planting an apple tree itself is worthy. It's not about, okay, well, yes, we'd love to get apples, but planting the apple tree is the thing.
Yeah. And you know how I'm integrating that phrase too, because I've heard a similar version of that. It's almost as if, you know, it's kind of extending the context above and beyond just you and in your lifetime, or us and our lifetime, but that we're here in this particular moment, and maybe the world that we know it will end, but life goes on. And there's going to be people after us and generations after us. And so why not? I love that. Even just the very act of planting the seed is a signal of like, this too shall pass and this too shall go on. Mm. I love that. Mm. Thanks for bringing that to the conversation.
Mm. Yeah. And I love your reflection about that, is acknowledging that though this, it's funny you said that, because I was thinking about dinosaurs today, just today. Like I was thinking how, like, was it worth it? You know, like if there was like 150 million years of, I don't know how many, a long time of dinosaurs, and then they were gone.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's it, bro. Dinosaurs are done. But it's still like, here we are. Here's life happening. And I that to me, there's like hope in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I love that.
That's beautiful. So I'm sorry, you got something there.
No, I was just going to just put a bow on that. And so if someone's listening in, particularly, you know, I've worked with many different types of entrepreneurs, spiritual conscious entrepreneurs, but, and then like there's been a fraction of people I've worked with who are maybe healers or therapists or body workers or people who are providing some value to other people in that way. And, I feel like one of the things that breaks my heart with a handful of them, not all of them, is that they are associating making money and making a living with something evil or something that's not good. And if anything, a good reframe is it allows you to be able to be of your highest service when you are resourced and you are sourced. It allows you to be able to be of service to other people on a bigger platform, on a bigger level, on a bigger stage, if that's what you desire to experience, right? And so I think having that good little reframe might ignite something in someone listening in.
Yeah, thank you for that. And please, if anyone is listening and this is landing for you, let me know. I'm happily pass any messages of resonance on from you to Ree. And it certainly resonates with me. That is the process I'm in right now. I'm working. Do you know Kerry Nola by any chance? Are you connected with her at all?
Kerry? No, I'm not. No. Okay, so where's she based?
I met her through, or she's in the States somewhere. I'm sorry, I don't know where, but I met her through Matthew. So, okay. Matthew Cook, who we met through, and she has something called Receptivity Portal. She was actually also a guest on this podcast a few episodes ago, and she's helping me to reframe that beautifully as well in similar ways that you are, where she actually talks about it from a nervous system perspective, which I think is so interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, she asked me, you know, what was the best you were doing financially when your Patreon page was really successful? And I was like, oh, I was making around this much every month. That was kind of the average it would sit at. She's like, okay, so that's the limit your nervous system felt available for. She's like, so what we need to do is support your nervous system in being available to receive more than that. I was like, oh, that's super interesting. So I thought you might enjoy that little tidbit.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I love that more and more people are coming out with these other angles or other ways to kind of understand what are some of the tools or access points that allows us to be able to, I'll use the word ascend to another frequency of attracting money or opportunities. Because I certainly had to go through that journey leaving the corporate world, working for someone else. 14 years ago, I was like, I had to expand my own awareness of what I'm able to generate in terms of income or opportunities. It's a very different mindset. So
could you share a bit more about that? Because I think that turning point, like, I've had a few people I've heard from, or even clients I worked with, and I hear people saying, you know, I feel stuck in this structure of something like a corporate environment or this work that's very kind of stable and reliable, but stagnant. And it's like, there's the sense that something is dying, but it's also scary to now go, okay, well, I'm going to do something that's more authentic for me. And I'm hearing that that's been a process you've obviously gone through. So what was your life like in that corporate world, and what prompted that shift for you?
Yeah, great question. Okay, so this is really fascinating, and I'll give you the framework. And if you're listening in, you can apply this for yourself. But the formula, so I was in a personal development program, and the exercise was to fill in the X and the Y in this statement. So I want X, but Y. And so I said, okay, I'll play this game. And this is when I was still working in a, you know, for someone else. And I said, all right, well, I want to quit my job. That's the X. But, and then the Y was, I don't have another job lined up. Okay. So then the exercise is to keep going down. What does not having another job lined up mean for me? It meant, okay, I'm not going to be able to pay my mortgage or my rent at the time. I'm not going to be able to buy nice clothes because I was into buying clothes and looking a particular way. I was living in New York City. I'm not going to be able to enjoy entertaining or eating out. What are people going to think about me? People are going to think I'm a failure. I had my whole identity wrapped up in having this job. And when it really got down to the bottom of what does not having another job lined up mean to me, at the core of it was that I would lose control of my life. Now, if you're tuning in, if I said, I want to quit my job, but I would be losing control of my life, if that was the underlying belief. And in that moment, I realized, wait a minute, actually, if I leave a job that no longer is serving me, that is not giving me the financial resources that I desire, then I would actually be taking control of my life. So that reframes opened up the door of like, okay, what does taking, could I get to say how much I get to make? Now, that took a little bit of time, because then I was like, I was so used to getting that paycheck every 2 weeks. And then I was like, okay, well, no, I was very committed to building this next thing. And at the time it was a branding agency. And I was like, well, I wanted to leave the branding, corporate branding world, and I wanted to create my own, but I was tired of working with like corporate brands. I wanted to work with brands that were making some sort of impact, that were making a difference, And I remember I was at an event, and these two people were at the event. Well, this was, again, 13 years ago. They made an offer from the stage. And this is the first time I've ever seen something in action where someone was, I'm at an entrepreneur event, someone's making an offer, and a bunch of people are running to the back of the room to buy this offer. And it was $2,000. Now, at that time, and I had a six-figure salary working for someone else, and then, of course, I wasn't working. I was like, that's a lot of money. And it is, depending on who you ask and depending on where your mindset is at that time. I was like, that's a lot of money for this program. But something inside me knew that I needed to do that. And then I did. And then that landed me joining a high-end mastermind, which I had no business joining in my first year in business. It was like a, it was a five-figure investment. But Nathan, I tell you, the thing that pushed me through that or empowered me was I made a decision that I was going to replace my income working for someone else, but on my own. So I knew what the number was. It was like, okay, well, if I can do that, then I can pay for this mastermind and then some. And then I'd be free. You know, a little nod to your podcast. It was like, yeah. All right, this is freedom. So joining that mastermind was a game changer for me. It's probably within 6 months, I replaced my income working for someone else. I'll share one other thing because this is, I want to show you the levels of this conversation. Then I started growing and then I started making double what I used to make. And then at one point, 3 years in my business, I got an opportunity to invest $100,000 to be the title sponsor for this big event, which probably had like anywhere from 5,000 to 6,500 people. And it was a big event, from an opportunity for me. And I was like, $100,000. Now, I've just told you a few years ago before this time, I thought $2,000 was a lot of money. And I was like, $100,000. But then I started to look at the opportunity. I was the main stage speaker. I had a breakout. My name was my company name. I've since sunsetted my company name, Branding for the People. But I built a brand for 13 years for that agency. And that was another threshold that I crossed to experience new levels of success. So within that $100,000, I generated $100,000 in revenue on site at the event. And then post that event, I probably did about $500,000 in like 2 years after that, sponsoring that event. And then I kept getting more opportunities. But the ROI comes in not just money, but it's just the experience of being on stage in front of 5,000 people, the experience of saying, I did that. And it's just sending a signal to the universe saying, okay, this guy is ready to give that which he, excuse me, that the universe was saying, this guy is ready to receive that which he's willing to give. And that's really important. Like, how am I possibly going to be able to ask someone to pay me $100,000 to work with them, whatever the number is, if I'm not willing to invest $100,000 in myself? Because it was a $100,000 investment, not just to be a title sponsor, but it was me betting on myself. So anyway, I share that all to say is like, there's an evolution in that. And the bigger you expand your mindset and your capacity around what you're willing to invest in yourself, the bigger the opportunities will come and attract towards you, because you've already demonstrated that you're aligned with the frequency of investing bigger in yourself.
Thank you for sharing that story, Ree. What you're reminding me, you're helping me to see something slightly differently, reframe, which I've heard you use that a few times. And yeah. I love that. I'm just thinking to those of my clients who seem to consistently have experienced the biggest transformations while we're working together, are those who believe that they're like, who enthusiastically make the investment, even if it's a difficult one for them, they commit. Like, I've had one recently who she, you know, it was a lot of money. And she said, like, can we do a payment plan? So we worked out a payment plan, and she was just so committed. And she was so committed to getting the value out of it because it meant so much to her. Yeah. And what was amazing, and I get tingles when I talk about this, because it's not something I can ever guarantee because I'm not necessarily a business coach. And I'm not a business coach. I'm not necessarily, not at all. But yeah. One of the things she wanted was to generate more resources. And we started doing this work together. And within, before we'd even done, as a 3-month program, in about month two, around there, she got on one session and she's like, you won't believe what's just happened. Like they just raised my income and gave me less hours. And like now I have more time to do those other things I wanted to do. And it was through her, because she took that depth of commitment. And instead of going, oh, this is really expensive. Like, is this worth it? How many hours are you doing? Is it worth the hours we're going to work together? And really like getting so intensely about trying to make it work out how it's valuable. She was like, I believe in this. This is valuable. I commit 100%. Here's how we can do it. And I watched that shift for her. And I've seen it happen with a few of those. I'm now just seeing the pattern because you've reflected that. So thank you.
Yeah, well done. Well done. And good on you for being able to, when you can, because I've done something similar where it's like, okay, someone's like, when they're a request for a payment plan, you can hear in the background that they're committed, that they've made a decision to bet on themselves. They just need to work out some details. I honor that oftentimes. Some people, aren't as flexible, but I always pay attention to those because I needed a payment plan for the $100,000. And so I was like, all right, I'm committed. I'm going to make it happen. And so good on you for extending that, because now you've transformed that person's life, right? And so I would say when the first step really is for someone to make a decision that this shall be, then everything else is just the details to work out. That's usually the starting point, not let me wait until I have the money in order to make the decision. It's let me make the decision and then the money will follow.
Wow. Thank you. I think if we just ended there, that would be some serious gold for people. But fortunately, we don't have to. So
we don't have to. What's that?
So I really want to take some time for your branding expertise, because I mean, people listening to this, I really want to encourage anyone listening to this to go and check out your work after this, and just to understand the level of work that Ree has done and continues to do in the world. Really, you are having the opportunity to listen to a master here, and it's phenomenal. So yay us. And there's something I wanted to do. I meant to do this earlier, but I was just saying a little prayer at my altar before we started up here. And I opened one of my favorite books in the world, which is the Hafiz's book. The subject tonight is love. And there's a whole story about how this book changed my life completely many years ago. It's my most dog-eared, tattered book imaginable. But I was like, let's just see what the message for me and Ree is today. Like, what's the vibe here? And this poem, I opened on this poem. It's called The Day Sky. Let us be like two falling stars in the day sky. Let no one know of our sublime beauty as we hold hands with God and burn into a sacred existence that defies, that surpasses every description of ecstasy and love.
Wow, that was so good.
So that's the gift for us today, Ree. And then on to the next important question. Why should my brand be gay even if I'm not?
Well, so what you're demonstrating here is what every brand should want to have when they're communicating to the world, which is to invite a conversation. And so I'm kind of teaching on a meta level the power of branding with the title of my book. You know, I'm glad it was met with curiosity. Like, why should it be gay? You know, oftentimes what I get from people is like, oh yeah, of course it should be gay because, you know, gay people are creative and this and that, and they'll have their own interpretation of things. Or I'll get reactions like, that's really funny. That's really clever. I'll evoke some kind of emotion. Or I'll get some responses of, well, I don't know. I disagree with that. I don't think it should be. I don't get a lot of those, but I have had a couple of things where people are offended by that. That's branding. So a branding is about, so the book is about brand authenticity. It's being your most authentic brand, and that knowing that people are going to love you and people are going to hate you, people are going to be repelled by you, people are going to lean into who you are. And so let me break down a couple of things. So one, a brand should be polarizing. or it can be polarizing, right? And so if you're offended by that or if you're intrigued by it, most likely your brand is pretty strong. The second thing that the brand is also doing, it's making a bold statement through words. Now, I could have meant your brand should be happy, but it's interesting that a three-letter word can create a whole other world based on your association or relationship to that word. So the power of language. And then I kind of add in a little inclusiveness. So your brand should be gay, even if you're not. It's a little bit of like gets you to think, right? Mm-mm. So I want to be inclusive. And then if you look at the book title, the book cover, it's very bold. It's using big letters. It's a pink covered book. It's bold. It stands out. You know, I don't know a lot of pink books on Amazon, but I'm one of the few. But there is something that's also really encoded that's a little bit deeper for me personally. And because the book is about brand authenticity, if I wrote the book, How to Build an Authentic Brand, I don't think I'd get the same reaction. I don't think you'd say, Ree, how can I create an authentic brand? You might, but it might be out of, you know, just out of courtesy.
Yeah, different kind of energy there.
Different kind of energy. I came out as a gay man in the 90s, where dating myself, of course, I was in my 20s. And in New York City, it wasn't necessarily, and maybe some parts of the world, it's still not necessarily safe to come out. It has since evolved. But what I'm also sharing is that you're the most powerful when you can be fully authentically yourself and not necessarily caring what other people think about you or feel about you, that you're not enslaved to other people's perception of you or other people's, how other people want to perceive you. It's so nuanced for me. And so I'm not going around trying to get people to hate me, but I'm certainly not going around from the context of making sure that people love me. Because first and foremost, I need to love me. And that really is kind of the journey. It's like, okay, well, you know, how do I love myself? How can I be more authentic with myself? And I can put out a book like Your Brand Should Be Gay, even if you're not. And to be honest, it's been a beautiful ride because it's a lot of acknowledgement from people. You're like, yes, I get it. I want to read your book. I want to lean into authentic. And if I can just have a little bit more power on just being exactly who I am and who I'm not, then mission accomplished. So if that's what you want, Nathan, if you want your brand to be an authentic representation of who you are and knowing that it's going to attract the people that you were meant to be in conversation with and repel those who aren't aligned with you, then yeah, you should build a brand. It should be gay, even if you're not.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ree. It's there's so much in there that is gold for me, certainly. I realized some years ago that my foundational desire, and maybe this is, I don't want to say it's everyone's, but I do see it as one of the primary human needs, is for authenticity. And I did, this is now years ago, I did the, I think it was Find Your Why with the Simon Sinek book, which I really enjoyed.
Simon Sinek, yeah?
Yeah, it really was helpful for me and for some friends. We kind of went through it together. And so I did these little interviews that and went through all the messages I'd received from people over the years for my music and for all these different things that I've done over the years. And the most common thread that I could pick out of all of it was, when I connect with you, Nathan, through your music, your poetry, your coaching, whatever it is, I feel like I get permission to be myself. That's like, I can be more me. I can be authentic. And so that was like, oh, that, and when I was hearing that and reading that, I was like, yes, that's like, if I can hear from someone that they feel like they could be more themselves after connecting with me, my job is done. Like I am, that is it. So I love hearing you say that. Yeah. And I also love how you've taken it as you said, it's just not about, it's not just how to be authentic. Because, and this is something I wrestle with, I continue to wrestle with, because I often use that word authentic And I realize that for many people, that doesn't go deep enough. Like it's not, it doesn't express how important, not just important, critical it is, authenticity is. It is like, Gabor Mate actually says it. He says it's one of the two primary needs that every human has is for authenticity. But the other one is, I think, for safety. And if we aren't safe as children, we will sacrifice authenticity. But that becomes this thing that over our lifetime starts to really negatively impact us on a physiological health level. So anyway, you're hitting all the nails on all the heads here.
Yeah, I love that.
Well, you know, what's interesting is, and I don't know if you're going to ask me this someone's interview, but if I may, yes, authenticity, depending on what you listen to and which circles you're in, it's probably an overused term. It might be. But let's just say it's just a term. And in some ways, it can be diluted, which is why I decided to, so I had rebranded from Branding for the People to Category of One Branding, which is my new consulting firm. But Category of One, if you really think about it, it's if you were a Category of One brand, that is probably like another richer, deeper expression of authenticity, of being in your own category, in your own lane. You're not playing the rules of the game. You're actually writing the rules of your own game. You're not competing with your competitors. You're not competing for attention. Rather, you're commanding attention. And it's, to me, it's the idea of just like, yeah, did you want to be just another one in the category? Or would you rather be a category of one? And so I think it's a great question. And even in the era of AI, where everything is at everyone's disposal, like it sort of neutralizes us having access to a lot of the same things. I think this message is even more resonant of how can you bet on yourself and be a category of one and still use AI. But I think elevating that, let's bring more of the authentic version of the human experience of your own experience as and your own manifesto and ethos as a brand, and then use AI to help amplify that and augment that.
Yeah, you preempted my next question, so it's perfect timing. Because this idea of the category of one is really a powerful, and I love that you've, again, reframed it or given it, contextualized it within the idea of it's a unique way of describing authenticity. We could use the word create an authentic brand, but it's not category of one. Immediately there's it's like, oh, category of one. There's a curiosity spike. It's like, oh, that's an interesting way of talking about it, of thinking about it. So I would love to provide some value for we've provided so much, but like, you know, because some of these kind of things, it can be like, okay, wow, this is exciting. Now what do I do? So it's like, what is something you would recommend or an exercise that the listener can do that would support them in taking even just one step in the direction of creating a category of one brand?
Yeah, so I've been using a couple different frameworks, but I'll start with one. The word one, O-N-E, in the category of one. And so I created a framework using those three letters on places to look or angles to consider when it comes to crafting your own brand. And so the O, what does the O stands for? The O stands for originate, original, comes from that realm. It's like, what's something that you can originate or a fresh, new approach, perspective, methodology, insight? What is something that originates from you? And what I'm also really speaking to, it's from deep within you that wants to come out, right? What's something that you are the originator of? Okay. The N part is a category of one brand can also own a narrative. Okay. So what's the narrative or what's the story or what's the paradigm or the pendulum of thought that you want to own in the marketplace. And so for some people that, so I'm kind of talking about branding in a lot of different circles. Broadly speaking, I'm known for branding. But then also broadly speaking, I'm known for authentic branding and category one branding. And so what's the narrative that you want to own in your industry? And then the E part is, okay, maybe you're not necessarily originating something completely new. Maybe you're not necessarily owning a narrative. Maybe you're joining a bigger narrative, but now you're elevating, which is the E, you're elevating an industry so that you become the new standard. So I've done this with clients where either like, okay, you have a new idea, fresh idea. Okay, let's build a brand on basically on something that you are originating. Okay, you have a movement, a message, and you want to own that message. So one of my clients is in the gut health industry, and what they're doing is they're providing Kitchery, they're combining functional medicine with the time-tested wisdom of Ayurveda. So they're owning the narrative of functional Ayurveda. See how this, like, okay, that let's create a category one. No one's really talking about functional Ayurveda. And then the E, the elevate, is our, and this happens with a lot of my clients, is like you take an industry and you look at the paradigm and the constructs and the ways of doing things, and you say, like, okay, that's outdated, or that is no longer effective. How can we then elevate the industry to a new level that brings everyone else up? And so let me use that as a framework, the O and the N and the E, and then I can go deeper into a little bit more tactic. But I think it first starts with the broader reframe on a higher level on how to think about category one branding.
For me, one of the distinguishing factors of someone worth listening to is when you can say something that's actually like a super big idea in a really simple way. It's like, because everything you just said makes 100% sense to me. Like, I'm just like, yeah, I get that. Yeah. Totally get that. I can already see how I could apply it in my own life. And it actually gives me a sense of inspiration. We talked about inspiration earlier, but a sense of there's energy moving because it's like, oh, now I can do something with this. So thank you for that. Okay. That's fantastic. Is there anything else? You said something about more tactical. Is there anything else you would like to offer our delightful listeners in this moment?
Yeah. So, you know, what I'm going to share will be predicated, I suppose, depending on where someone's at. And so oftentimes some people might be in the early stage of their career or their business or building their brand, or there might be a little bit more advanced. And so what I think would be really important to share, regardless of where you are in building your brand, is that you already have a brand. So the way that I define brand, it's a perception. It's a perception, and it's a story, it's an identity, and branding is creating the desired perception that you want to have in the marketplace. The thing is that people have a perception already of you. They usually form that within the first 15 seconds of them interacting with you, whether it's conscious or subconscious. They usually form a perception of you within the first 15 seconds. And so the question then becomes, is it the perception that you want to have? Is how people are perceiving you and receiving you, is that consistent with what's true to you? And so it becomes a question if you're like, actually, it is. You know, people perceive me as X and I stand for X. Not X as in the former Twitter, but X is the placeholder name. Yeah. And so, great, keep doing. Now amplify that. But if you're sitting with the question of like, well, I don't know what people think of me. I don't know how they perceive me, or I wish people would perceive me as better or more qualified or whatever the thing is, then that's an opportunity to then communicate, express, embody your brand. Okay, so I'm still like thinking like on a conceptual level, and you know, the tactics will be different for a startup versus a more established. But usually the tactics are around, for a startup person or entrepreneurs, for example, I tend to work with a lot of entrepreneurs, but I suppose someone can apply this if they're an artist, musician, or a healer, is like, we're all in service to other people. And so you want to answer the question, the who, what, and why. It's just like, who are my people? Who am I targeting? What is the problem that I'm solving for them? Or what is the value that I'm creating for them? And then why should they listen to me over everyone else that probably solves that same problem or claims that they can create value in this way? So it's a very simple tactical exercise of just answering the questions of who, what, and why. I can't tell you how often I talk with people who are thinking about starting a business and they're not even clear on who they're targeting. They're just like, it's for everyone. Anyone can benefit from my services. So like, okay, well, if you're targeting everyone, you're targeting no one. Now, for a more advanced entrepreneur or someone who's building a business in that kind of way, the opportunities are different. It's more a matter of like, okay, well, are we still attracting the right people? Or maybe we're expanding who we want to attract. And so does the message evolve? Do we need to elevate who we are becoming because now we've crossed the threshold of proof of concept? Now we're looking to expand and create more value for more people. So usually those questions are a little bit more advanced, a little bit more nuanced, but that becomes an elevation rather than like a proving of sorts. So anyway, I just wanted to throw in a couple of tactical stuff for people listening in that they can apply.
Thank you. Thank you, Ree. This has been such an honor of a chat. There's so many directions we could go in, and also I just enjoy being in your company. So for now, let's honor this beautiful time we've shared. And of course I'll share your links in the show notes, but are there any specific projects that you like people should, if they, the next action they take to find out more about you, where would you like them to go?
Yeah. So they can just go to reeperez.com. That's my personal brand site. And that's a portal for all the things that I'm up to, whether it's like my one-on-one consulting or I'm putting on an event in the fall. It's a transformational branding event. And then all my links to social media is there. That's a pretty good starting point. Just reeperez.com. And I'm happy to connect with people and share some tips and resources that could help to, you know, elevate and help someone become a category one brand.
Thank you. Thank you, Ree. And finally, when you hear We Are Already Free, what comes up for you?
Well, I knew this question was going to come. And I think what I love about this statement is I'm affirmative that we are already free. I think the journey for us is to remember that we're already free. And so some people they don't know that they're already free, and maybe they're told that they're not. And some people are very much embodied and saying, yes, we are already free. And I think the opportunity is to, at least for me, I don't think that I've always related to myself as already free. I think I've always desired to be free, but as I've expanded and as I've evolved, and I shared with just my own level of expanding my relationship to money, I think freedom is also another layer of expanding. Where else can I be free? Where else can I create more freedom? And what needs to be true in order for me to fully experience the kind of freedom that feels aligned and supportive and nourishing for me? So it's an expansion of sorts. If you're already free, just keep pulling that thread and explore new layers and experiences of what freedom looks like.
Well, thank you so much, Ree. It's I feel deeply honored to have shared this time with you on We Are Already Free, and it's an absolute pleasure. I'm gonna gently nudge you into the green room and have a little outro, and then we'll have a little chat at the end there. Just thank you so much, brother. What a pleasure.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate you. Have a great day.
All right, dear humans, that brings us to the end. And I mean, I don't have to tell you because you just listened to that. That was phenomenal. So much goodness in there. I think for me, there's so many takeaways. One of them that jumps out immediately is hope. that hope is worth giving people. Hope is worth selling. Hope is worth showing up for. It's worth planting that apple tree. So yeah, just check out Ree's work. Of course, really, really phenomenal stuff. And I will have it in the show notes as always. And just thank you. Thank you for being on this journey with me. Couldn't do it without you. It's a total pleasure. I'm about to have a little extra bonus chat with Ree. And this is actually what I'd like to share with you in this moment, is to invite you to become one of those who is creating this podcast with me, creating songs, poems, and the coaching work that I do, supporting me as a patron on Patreon. More and more, I feel there are so many people in the world I want to support in various ways. And the more that you join me in these creations, the more that I can share it out there into the world in a flowing and fluid way. It really makes a massive difference. Not only that, but you will get the access to the bonus chat with Ree, where I'm going to ask him at least one question, which is around how to, if you're looking for support with your own branding, how do you know if the person you're talking to is a person you should be listening to about this? How can you find someone to partner with to help you in your branding? And I have a few things other I want to chat with him about. We'll see how we do. And either way, thank you for being here. Thank you for being on this already free journey with me. Please go to alreadyfree.me/Patreon. Go to the show notes, check Ree out. We will be back next week with more. As always, please remember, we are already free.